Be seated.
What a beautiful song. Thank you, Bryce, for leading us in those songs. If you have your Bibles, turn over to the Old Testament book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 1. We're all very familiar with the story of Daniel in the lion's den, but that was capable of happening because of an attitude that was formed early in the life of Daniel. If you remember in church history, the history of Israel, after the divided kingdom, because of idolatry and because the people had turned again and again away from God, God warned them through the prophets that that northern kingdom would be taken into captivity unless they changed their ways. They didn't change their ways. And so Assyria was used as a rod of God's wrath against his own people. And the Assyrians came in and took away the northern group. And when they took them away, the policy of the Assyrians was brutal. They adopted a scorched earth policy. And their policy was to totally annihilate those that they went up against. And so the northern kingdom was destroyed. They were taken away. They were killed, never to return. Years later, God gave the same warning to the southern kingdom there in Judah. He told them through the prophets, unless they changed their ways, unless they repented of their idolatry, they too would be taken away into captivity just as the northern kingdom had been taken away. And after their refusal to respond to God's repeated entreaties, they were taken away. God sent Babylon, the Babylonians, to come and take them away. But Babylon had a very different approach to those they conquered than the Assyrians had. The Babylonians took the best of the land and they approached their captives in an assimilation way. And rather than annihilating their enemies, they took the conquered and they wanted to make them into Babylonians. And so they took the prime of the land. They took the young folks, the intelligent, the capable, and they took them back to assimilate them into their culture. And that's what happened with Daniel and those three men, the three that we know by the names of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Begin in chapter 1 here with me and read through these first few verses together. Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. In fact, let's read all the way down through verse 21, that whole section there. In the third year of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia, and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names: to Daniel, the name Belshazzar; to Hananiah, Shadrach; to Mishael, Meshach; and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now, God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these 4 young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. Daniel arrived in this new land, and he was the recipient of the best the Babylonians had to offer. He went through their educational process. He learned their literature. He even accepted a new name, a Babylonian name that they gave him. But he drew the line when it came to the food that the king offered him. Why in the world would he not eat the king's royal food? That would have been a treat for most of us. Well, it was because Daniel was a Jew. And God had been very careful to lay out the foods that were clean and the foods that were unclean. Daniel had lived according to what we today call a kosher diet, a diet of clean food. And apparently the foods that were offered him there in Babylon would have been a violation of this. So Daniel would not violate his conscience. He would not go against the laws of God. In all these other areas, he could do those things without compromise, but in this area, he could not do it and still be faithful to his God. So he drew the line, and he said to Nebuchadnezzar, "No thanks." Now, Nebuchadnezzar was not the kind of man who was accustomed to someone saying no thank you to. But Daniel knew that it was not Nebuchadnezzar who was ultimately in control, but God. And when we remember that God is in control of life's situations, it'll give all of us incredible confidence to do what's right. Daniel had this confidence because he knew who was ultimately in control. Now, Daniel used a strong word there in verse 8. He would not be defiled by eating these foods. He could have made up an excuse. And when they brought in the pork chops, Daniel and his friends could have just said, we don't really care for pork. And probably got around it in a less potentially offensive way. When they brought in the catfish, which was also an unclean food for a Jew, he could have said, I'm allergic to catfish. And maybe that would not have ruffled the feathers of the king or his steward. And I know that sometimes we're probably tempted to get out of some issue that involves spiritual matters by offering a non-spiritual reason for our decline. You guys all go on to that party. I just don't feel well. when we really know at that party there are going to be some things that are going to be taking place that I don't really feel good about being part of as a Christian. But I'm embarrassed to just come right out and tell my friends, you know, as a Christian, I don't feel good about being part of that scene. And so I'll say, I just don't feel well. You guys go on and enjoy yourselves, and I'll stay behind. Unashamed boldness is a fruit of an uncompromising lifestyle. Listen to these words of Jesus. If anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. That's in Mark chapter 8. The story is told about two kings who were in battle. On one side, a king came and he had 500 men. On the other side, another king came and he had 5,000 men. And the king of the 5,000 sent a messenger and said, I want to arrange surrender terms. You cannot possibly go up against my thousands with your 500 men. And that king with a small army called in one of his men and he said, take the dagger out of your belt and plunge it into your heart. And immediately, without question, the soldier did that and fell dead. He called in another one of his men and he said, go out and jump over the precipice. And immediately that soldier went out without question and jumped to his death. And the king then told the messenger, he said, you go back to your king with his thousands and you tell him what you've seen and you tell him that I have 498 more men just like that. Well, so the story goes, as soon as the word came back, there was mass desertion among those 5,000. And before the end of the day, it was the king of the many who surrendered to the king of the committed. Daniel knew what we know. With God on our side, with a commitment to do what's right, you cannot lose. Now, Daniel had another thing going for him here, and I'm convinced this is something we all need. He had that extra mile attitude. He was willing to go an extra mile in what he did here. Look what he chose to eat in verse 12. This is a diet that I would have difficulty with. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Nothing but vegetables and water. Now, isn't that being a little bit extreme? Is that what a kosher diet consists of? No. Jews were able to eat beef. They were able to eat lamb. They were able to eat all kinds of fish. They were able to eat a lot more than vegetables and water. And yet David goes to the extreme here. He says, just let us have vegetables and water. Have you ever noticed that many of the great men and women that we read of in the Bible are people who seem to go to extremes, that they're often seen as a little bit strange? The prophets like John the Baptist, who we would say tend to carry things a little bit too far sometimes in the way they respond. I wonder which is better, though. A Christian who wants to know what the bare minimum level of commitment is, or a Christian who wants to know what the maximum is that he or she can do. Daniel took that extra mile attitude. He gave up wine entirely. That was not required under a Jewish kosher diet. But he did that, and he went to just a strictly vegetable diet. Now, let me just stay with this example of wine, going back and looking in the Old Testament. An extra commitment often required going an extra mile. Aaron and his sons in this area had a special stipulation placed on them. Back in Leviticus chapter 10, verse 8, God said to Aaron and his sons, you and your sons are not to drink wine or other fermented drink whenever you go into the tent of meeting, or you will die. This is a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. You must distinguish between the holy and the common, between the unclean and the clean. So if you were to be part of the Aaronic priesthood, then God said, you forever give up the use of wine. But there was another group of people. Remember that group called the Nazarites? Those who took a Nazarite vow. Samson was one of those. You know what Nazarites did when they took that vow on? Listen to this in Numbers chapter 6. If you're going to do this, it says, he must abstain from wine and other fermented drink and must not drink vinegar made from wine or from other fermented drink. He must not drink grape juice or eat grapes or even raisins. As long as he is a Nazarite, he must not eat anything that comes from the grapevine, not even the seeds or the skins of grapes. Wow! Now that is extreme. I mean, it's one thing to be a priest and say, I'll never drink wine. It's another thing entirely to be a Nazarite and say, I'm going to go all the way out here, this extra mile, and I won't even be associated with anything that even looks like a grape or smells like a grape. But you know, those who choose the highest and the best often go the extra mile. I wish that we wouldn't view people who sometimes set high standards for themselves as being strange or weird. I mean, God didn't do that. Daniel was like that, and God blessed him for that. I wish we as Christians could choose that extra mile attitude in some of the areas of our life rather than seeing how close to the edge we can get. Well, Daniel chose to take on that extra mile attitude. Another thing he did, he, in his uncompromising stance, realized that God would provide divine protection. Those three men with him understood that even if God didn't provide divine protection, they would not buckle, they would not yield, they would not bow to the gods of any but the true God. They were prepared to go through the fire and give their life, even though God was capable of providing that protection. In verse 9 there, it says, now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. You know, God can change circumstances. God can change attitudes. God can provide protection for those who are willing to make a stand. Daniel resolved in verse 8 that he wouldn't defile himself, and God moved in verse 9 to provide protection for Daniel in that stance. And it's important to recognize that wasn't Daniel's charm that brought that about. It wasn't his wit. It was nothing in Daniel. It was God who brought about that change of attitude in the one that Daniel was dealing with. The same is said of the other captives back in the psalm that traces the history of Hebrew captivity. It says there in Psalm 106, verse 46, that God caused them to be pitied by all who held them captive. That's ultimately why they were released. Now, some people would rather trust in compromise to get them out of trouble. Remember David, whenever he was fleeing from Saul and he went down and was hiding in the enemy's territory, and he was down there with the king of Gath. His name was Achish. And when the king heard that David was there, he was going to go and arrest David. But David pretended to be a madman. And he scratched on the wall and he drooled into his beard. And the king of Achish saw that and he says, don't we have enough crazy people already in this town? Get rid of the man. Now, David went into a period of deep depression following that. Rather than trusting God, he compromised and tried to solve his own problem and get out of that mess. And compromise almost always takes you out of the protection of God. Daniel stood strong, and God saw that he was looked upon favorably by those over him. And that same kind of uncompromising lifestyle yielded persistency for David. Look in verse 11 and following. The guard said, I don't think that's a good idea, Daniel, for you to go off the king's diet. I don't think that's a good idea at all, because you're going to put me at risk. And Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief had appointed over him, test us for 10 days. Daniel could have said, well, you know, I at least tried. But he didn't stop there. He came back again and said, no, give us a trial run on this thing before you say no. Try it out and see if what I'm saying will not come to pass. And so he, again, because God was with him, he allowed Daniel to do that. And then it resulted in tremendous blessing for Daniel and his friends. Look at all that God did for them as a response to that kind of committed level. In verse 17 it says, God gave them knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. Visions are what you get when you're awake. Dreams are how God communicates to you when you're asleep. These young men had something going for them that nobody else had. And you know what that was? God. They honored God in their life. And so God blessed them in these incredible ways. Later on it says that they were 10 times better than all the others that served before the king. And you know, the same thing is true today of anyone who is an uncompromising follower of Jesus Christ. 10 times better than anyone who doesn't know Jesus. You'll be 10 times wiser and 10 times kinder and 10 times more loving. In every way, God blesses those who take a stand for Him. And your life will turn out better than all those who turn their back on God. Now, it says that Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. You know how many years later that was that King Cyrus came onto the throne? 70. For 70 years, Daniel was in that position of favor and leadership because of the stand that he took in his youth. And it's interesting because 600 years later, Jesus is born in Bethlehem. And it says that the Magi came from the east and they followed that star. Have you ever wondered, how in the world did those wise men from the east even know about Jesus and even know about this coming Messiah? They came from the east, back over there in Babylonia. The only way they could have known is because faithful men and women like Daniel, who, even though they were held captive in that land, had spread the tidings of God, and they had talked to the people there in that land about the coming Messiah that their God had told them about. And the knowledge of God was spread even into Babylonia. And so 600 years later, these wise men from that very area now make their way back over to the little town of Bethlehem. You know, an uncompromising life can touch future generations in ways that we cannot even begin to imagine. And I just wonder, what will our legacy be? Because of the choices, many of them that have to be hard choices, that we make right now in our generation. I hope that future generations are blessed because of my life, and I know you have the same desire that future generations will be blessed because of your life and the choices that you make. This is a wonderful story, and Daniel is a tremendous example for all of us. We have a God who will be unashamed of us if we're unashamed of Him. Tonight, if you need to respond in boldness and unashamedly to God, confessing Jesus Christ, turning from sins in order to be baptized, we'll gladly assist you as you do that. If you're here tonight and you need the prayers of your brothers and sisters, I hope that we're never ashamed to admit our failings. I'll tell you right now, I am a sinner saved by grace. and I fall short of my expectations, and I fall short of my family's expectations, and I surely fall short of God's expectations. And I hope we can be honest with each other and transparent. And when we need prayers from our brothers and sisters, that we can share the reality of our frailty with each other. I hope we're a family that can do that. If you need prayer, I hope you'll have the courage to ask for help. If you need to come tonight, we invite you to do that as we stand and as we sing.